This is The Gardening Show
with Master Gardener Bob Harris
on WESB.
Presented by Worth W. Smith Hardware.
Call the show 368-WESB.
That's 368-9372.
And a good autumn morning to you. And it's The Gardening Show. I'm Igor. With me, as always, is Master Gardener Bob Harris. Good wet, cold Saturday morning.
Yeah, indeed. Good morning.
All right. What's on the agenda today?
First off, I want to talk to the hunters.
Okay.
I know that they're out there. Bow season has begun. And something the hunters can do and should do when they're out in the woods. Stop by that oak tree or old apple tree and pick up some of the fruit that's fallen to the ground, nuts that are fallen to the ground, and walk off into another area and just drop them. You'll be seeding the forest in that way. Not just oak and apple, you know, beech and butternut and hickory, all those trees like that. You'll be doing your part to give back to the forest and help the forest keep growing. We have beautiful forest here, which maybe a lot of people have noticed. The leaf color this year has been really spectacular.
Yes, it has, too. I was noticing that. I was kind of wishing my parents are coming up today to visit from Ohio, and I'm like, they really missed it by maybe a week, but not all the way done.
Yeah.
But all the beauty driving up here. Over on 86 all the way through there.
Yeah.
Some real nice views.
Boy, I'll say, yeah.
But
just beautiful, yep. Really. And so I'll talk about the leaves a little bit. You know, I have mentioned that already through the season, but it's kind of important that you get the leaves cleaned up, especially in your grass, because it can choke out your grass if you get too many leaves. As long as you can still see the grass, you know, you're fine. Most mowers now are mulching mowers. That means they're going to chop up several times the leaves and your grass clippings so you don't have to collect. And as long as you can still see the green, you know, as you're mulching your lawn, you're fine. Once it gets to the point where you can't see the green anymore, there's too many leaves, then it's a good idea maybe to pick up those leaves and use them underneath your shrubs or trees. They become a great mulch, or put them in your compost pile or in your vegetable garden. They're all very, very useful, so don't let them go to waste and just sit there. As leaves pile up in your lawn, they can harbor pests. That gives them a great home to protect them through the winter. But again, they can also harbor beneficial insects too. So it's a choice you have to make. You know, whether to pick them up and use them elsewhere, or just leave them lay. But again, that mulching mower is going to do a great job of chopping them up. Leaves are important, I should say, because as they turn color and fall down, they're still full of carbon, and carbon is the beginning of all life. So that's what's going to help keep our soil alive, and of course keep our grass alive that way. So that carbon that's in those leaves is extremely important. So use it to keep your soil alive. But also, you know, if you have evergreens, try to sweep out or rake out or blow out those leaves that have collected in your evergreens, because again, they can harbor some pests in there, and then make the problem even worse the next year. So try to clean out those shrubs so that you don't have a problem come spring. I talked about the hunters and hikers in the woods and leaves, bulb planting. Still plenty of time to plant bulbs. We can plant bulbs all the way up to when the ground freezes. And They don't all have to go in the ground. We can plant bulbs in pots, even in the window boxes. So as you're pulling out your annuals, maybe it's a good time to stick some bulbs in there and get double duty out of your planters that way. And you can really, in a pot or container, you can really crowd your bulbs. You can plant them just an inch apart. So you can really crowd them because come spring, you're going to take them out after they're done flowering and then set them in a nice, cool, dark place. And then you can plant them again next year.
How much growth can we expect over the winter of a potted bulb?
Oh, they're going to start growing right away in the pot. And anytime it warms up a little bit, they'll continue to grow. Especially come spring, they'll just kind of sit there. Basically, they'll do a little bit of growth, but they'll sit there and wait for the warmer weather of spring. And then they just grow tremendously fast. And then they will flower for you. So you use those old pots and window boxes and containers that you have to add a little more color there to your landscape.
Great. Now we're on Facebook Live. That's why I was so quiet before.
Okay.
Trying to get this thing to work. So we're on there. If you want to join us on Facebook Live, you can. No show and tell today, but
no.
You can still, if you're a little bashful of, calling on the air on the radio, your question to Bob, you can leave a comment and we can get your statement or question to Bob that way. And if you would like to do the old-fashioned way and give us a call on the phone, we'd love to hear you at 814-368-WESB. That's 814-368-9372. And garden at WESB.com is our email address.
I was going to bring in some show and tell today, but I got a little lazy. I wanted to talk a little bit about tree rings.
Oh.
And so I was going to bring in what we call a cookie or two.
Oh, I see.
That's a slice of a tree trunk to where you can look at the rings of a tree growth.
They call that a cookie in the gardening world?
Yes, we call that a cookie.
That's fun.
You can call it a slice, whatever you want.
Cross section.
I've been collecting them for several years and studying them. Maybe not as much as I could, and someday I really plan to do a big study. And I've been collecting just the Bradford area ones. There's been collectors out there that have done a lot of them in the Southwest. Mostly for archaeological studies. Wow, I can't believe I said that.
Archaeological.
Yeah.
That's a lot of syllables.
because the tree rings tell us a lot, maybe more than what archaeologists have been able to deem with pottery and so on that they've found. The tree rings can tell us exact dates to the point where they can even tell us if it was spring or summer or fall or winter.
Wow,
even.
That's cool.
They can see all that in a tree ring. So let me try to explain a tree ring a little bit. I think most of you know about the tree rings in a
Yeah, we learned about that in school.
Yeah. But there are really two seasons in a tree ring that you can see. When you're looking at the rings, you'll see a darker section of a ring. That's what we call the summer wood or fall wood. That's the late season. And then we may see a lighter part of that ring. And that's the spring wood, when the tree first starts to wake up in the spring. So that consists of one whole year, that dark and light combined. And some rings are really wide and some rings are really narrow. And here in the Bradford area, they'll tell you, well, if it was a wet year, though, you'll have a wide ring. The tree could grow a lot. And if you had a dry year, then the ring will be very narrow and maybe even hard to see. And that's it's kind of different here in Bradford because we also have the effects of weather, considering the cold. So if we have an early winter, that will narrow the ring. But if we have a late winter or really late frost, we can have a wide ring. And then also, from time to time, we get that gypsy moth attack.
Mm.
And that can really affect the growth too. So during the gypsy moth attack, we may have a very narrow ring that year. So we have to look at all those things involved. And you can see other things too involved in the tree rings, especially if you get a whole cookie. That's the slice of a tree trunk. You can see on one side of the tree, the rings may be a little bit wider than the other side of the tree. That's probably a tree that's been growing on a hill. And the uphill side will be a little bit wider than the downhill side. So that's kind of interesting, too.
I'm just thinking of those giant 1,000-year-old trees, you know, that you see sometimes. Those, and they're like, I know they're awesome because they're old, but they're like big, ugly trees. You know? Like, wow, those. I'd love to take a look at a cookie of one of those things.
Yeah, me too.
But you'd have to cut it down to look, so you can't do that.
And you may be talking about the bristlecone pines out in California, in the mountains of California. One of them, called Medusala, is deemed to be over 7,000 years old.
Nice, yeah.
And most of those are protected. Well, all of those are really protected. So scientists has to get a lot of permission to be able to core into the trunk of that tree to count the rings.
Oh, that's how they do it.
They can't cut one of those trees down.
Yeah, okay.
But it's near impossible to even get the permission to core them anymore.
Sure.
Because they have been done, and they have been able to count the rings and
look at the history.
Look at the history of the rings, yes.
And know what's already able to learn.
Yeah.
So, you know, why keep doing it to all those trees? How many do you think are around that are that old?
Oh, just very few. There's only one that's 7,000 years old that they know of so far. But there are several in that area that are 2,000 and 3,000 and 4,000 years old.
Wow.
And the bristlecone pine, that's kind of a neat tree because you can even grow that here in Bradford. Now, it's a very slow-growing tree, but it will grow here in Bradford. And it so that kind of makes it kind of special to me.
Mm.
But speaking of tree rings, because I watched a neat show, I haven't finished watching it yet, about tree rings and volcano Krakatoa that erupted, the big eruption. It's erupted several times, but the big eruption was in 536.
Wow.
And because of a tree ring research, they have discovered a lot of things involved with that volcano. And again, that happened in 536. The tree ring people got a lot of other scientists involved in that research. And some of the information that they've gotten from that is that it probably did affect the whole world because it happened on the equator, that volcano, the eruption. And when a volcano on the equator happens, that can cast the ash from that volcano and the gases to the north and to the south. Now, if one happens above the equator, that all that ash will probably stay above the equator. But this happened on the equator, so it affected the whole world for years. And its ash was very, very fine, so it could go up into the atmosphere and remain there for years. 3 to 5 years it probably remained there. And so it created darkness, and that darkness created dryness because there was very little evaporation because the sun couldn't get through. Mm. So the peoples of the earth there went through an extremely dry period for a long period of time. And then after the dry period, then they went through extremely wet period.
Can't win.
Yeah, for a long time. And so they have decided that some civilizations completely disappeared during that time because of the weather conditions that that volcano caused. Mm-hmm. And some civilizations didn't totally collapse, but they did kind of collapse, like the Roman civilization. That was probably the beginning of their collapse because food was really hard to get.
I imagine a lot of them migrated to different areas looking for better conditions and completely yep. uprooted their civilization. Wow.
But, food became a problem, water, a big problem. And then, of course, all that makes disease rampant.
Mm.
So you add all those together and they guess that millions upon millions of people all over the world died during that period of time. So it was a whole world changing
event. Catastrophic.
And luckily, most civilizations did have writing from that. And so they've been able to decipher some of the writings from that volcano. But it's sad to say, the civilizations in America have no writing back then, our Native Americans.
Oh, really? Oh.
Yeah. So we really don't know of any real witnesses to that period of time, but we do know from other parts of the world, China and Asia and so on, that and even South America, that there was such an event and how it did affect everybody. So, that's what makes it interesting for me, too, is looking at the tree rings in our area, because to my knowledge, nobody studies them in our area. Like I said, most of the studies are out west because that's where most of the older civilizations, we think, are. Possibly there may have been some here. Now, it's hard to find an old tree in Bradford, but there are there. They may not be standing and alive yet. Years ago, I was lucky enough. I have a friend that has a large piece of property that was logged in the 1920s. Some very large hemlock and pine trees. And those stumps are still there and visible.
Mm.
And so we started cutting down. When we got close to the ground, we found that the stump was still
visible.
Visible, yeah. Mm-hmm. The whole stump. Most of the rest of it, was rotted right out. And we were able to look at the rings, and one particular tree went back to the 1400s.
Wow.
Yeah. So that makes it pretty interesting. And I've been able to prepare it. You've got to sand it down. To really see the rings clearly, you've got to sand it down, get the surface really clean and sanded, and then some kind of finish on it. So it preserves it, and then you can start to see the rings.
Rings kind of pop out visibly.
Yeah.
And you can see it easier. Yeah, neat.
And you get to see the wide rings and narrow rings and even big storms, where they will call that a shake, where the rings can become separated. And even lightning strikes you can start to see in there.
Wow.
And branches you can even see in the rings. So it's been a very interesting journey for me.
Now tell me you kept that one.
I did, yeah.
Okay.
I've kept several, really.
Do you hang them up on the wall or something?
No.
Do you have a big log file cabinet, cookie file cabinet?
No, some of those are quite large. That one there was over 7 foot wide, so it's pretty hard to hang on the wall and display. So I just got them stored in my garage.
Okay.
In a nice, safe area. But some are smaller. And that's what's interesting, too. You can cut down a 100-year-old tree, let's say, that's 2 or 3 foot wide. And you can cut down a 100-year-old tree that's only 4 to 6 inches wide. Trees grow just like humans. Some grow big and fast. Some mm-hmm. Stay small. But it makes it interesting, you can compare, just because you see a tree that's only six inches wide at the trunk and only 20 or 30 foot tall doesn't mean it's a new tree.
Mm-hmm.
It could be an old tree or ancient even. And then right beside it can be that same type of tree that has grown to 6 or 7 foot wide.
Maybe it just hogged all the sunlight
from the other could one. Be. Yeah, mm-hmm. And that's very possible. And that takes me back to the hunters picking up those acorns in the woods and taking them away from that mother tree, because they have a rough time growing underneath that mother tree. One thing is all the animals of the woods know where that oak tree is, and they know that's where to go to get that food source, which is a very nutritious fruit for all the animals in the woods. But also, the mother tree is casting so much shade that it's going to be very, very difficult for those new ones to start to grow. So by you just picking up a few and carrying them off into a sunny area and dropping them, you've given those acorns a chance to grow.
Phone lines are open, 814-368-9372. We'll be right back with more Gardening Show on B107.5, AM 1490, and WESP.
You know it's coming. That cold weather is on its way. Make sure you're ready with a visit to Worth W. Smith Company Hardware in Bradford. It's not too early to start stocking up on wood pellets for your heating stove. If it's time to replace your pellet stove, see Worth Smith for their line of quality Harmon stoves. You'll also find a big selection of stove pipes and other heating supplies in stock. And don't forget the antifreeze for your RV. Be prepared for the weather ahead. If you need it, you'll find it at Worth W. Smith Company Hardware in Bradford.
And welcome back to the Gardening Show on B107.5 FM. Phone lines are open if you have a question for Bob. And our Facebook Live is active as well. Facebook.com/WESB1075. And we have about, 5 to 7 minutes left in the show. We'll see what we can talk about or answer any questions. But earlier in the show, we were talking about leaves.
Yeah.
There's a lot of them on the ground right now.
Yeah.
And you said, because I don't really feel like raking.
Okay.
So I usually grind them up like you suggested, yeah, with the lawnmower. And you say you don't have to get them like so fine, like, you know, sand, like very, very small, just as long as you can see some green under it.
Yes. Yeah.
So now if I did want to use it as mulch.
Okay.
What's the ideal size after you chop them up for mulch? Or do you use whole? You don't use whole leaves.
You could use whole, but it's really recommended that they get chopped a little bit.
Okay. Maybe just one pass and then.
Oh, yeah. One pass is plenty.
Oh, okay.
And now another way of chopping up your leaves to make them better mulch is you put them in a garbage can and then take your string trimmer, just like a mixer, like you're making a cake.
Really?
Yeah, and just move it around in there, and that'll chop them up too. You don't have to chop them up into a fine dust, no.
Okay.
Just as long as they're, you know, cut in thirds or something like that.
Very good, okay.
But again, you know, you can, because our forest does it all the time, can just drop them whole underneath the tree. That's still going to work well. It's just going to take them longer to deteriorate.
Right. And it depends on what kind of plant you're probably putting them with, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Because it can promote, like you say, pests.
Pests, yeah.
Getting under.
It can harbor pests. Yeah.
Are you talking about insect pests?
About insect.
Okay.
Well, it can even harbor mice and chipmunks too.
Okay.
Make them a nice home. So it is a good idea to chop them a little bit.
I'm just wondering about the bushes around my house, like close to the house.
Yeah.
Put them under there because I obviously don't want, you know, pests, mice, or anything like that. But
yeah, if you chop them a little bit and then put them under there, it's going to be an excellent mulch. Before mulches, which started in the 60s, 70s, you know, that's what everybody did, was chop their leaves up with their mower and then or just rake them underneath the shrubs. And that was our mulch way back then. And like I said, that supplied a lot of the carbon and also helped insulate the ground so we don't get a freeze and thaw. That's what damages a plant.
Oh,
the freeze does not damage it. It's the constant freeze and thaw that does. So by putting those leaves or mulch underneath the plant, we make an insulating layer there. So once the ground freezes, it stays frozen, so it doesn't freeze and thaw and cause those cells inside to explode.
temperature control. Insulation.
Temperature control.
So, yep. So, okay, that makes sense.
But yeah, it by just doing full leaves, you know, it can be a little risky. I still do it, even though it's a little risky. You're going to harbor a few mice and chipmunks under there that may cause a little bit of a problem, and you may harbor some pests because, again, underneath those leaves, it's going to be well insulated.
Well, what about like the wetness too? Can you get like fungus?
Yeah, you can get fungus, but most of the time, 99.9% of the time, the fungus is a good thing.
Oh, okay.
All plant life relies on the fungus, and the fungus relies on the plant. They exchange nutrients, so fungus is not bad.
Okay. Well, that's good to know, because I'm always thinking about the natural, you know, the leaves, if I don't do anything to them in the yard, well, then the fungus kind of makes the lawn look a little rough, right?
Yeah. It can, yeah.
So, but yeah, chop them up a little bit.
Yep, rake them under those shrubs and trees.
I think I might try that this year.
It's free mulch.
Yeah, okay.
Yep. And it's very beneficial mulch, very beneficial. But, you know, if you don't want to put them underneath the shrubs, throw them into the garden, into the compost pile, because they're both excellent in that respect, too.
Okay. Well, guess what? We're all out of time today.
Okay.
On the gardening show. We have, one more episode, don't we?
Yeah, that's
it. Wow, we're almost done with the gardening show, another season. So we'll be back for the final time this year.
Okay.
Next week, right here on B107.5. Bob, thank you so much for coming in.
You're welcome.
And you have a great weekend.